We finished up with Acts 26, last study. And so we're going to pick up with 27, but let's go back two or three verses in 26 and catch up with what we need to know as we get into chapter 27, because these events taking place here are the ongoing events of the day or the time there, pretty much, as we get on toward the last chapter of the book of Acts, and of course that is the last dealings that we will have with the Apostle Paul, because he has written back to these people that after he left there, he hasn't been just sitting around. He's been writing back to get more information as he gets information, for them to know before he is not here anymore. And of course, we're down, basically down to Paul and maybe Timotheus and Luke and Titus. Titus must be getting pretty old at this point. And some of the others that have been on and off with Paul ever since he was converted on the Damascus Road, struck down, and have been told what he would need to do and what was expected of him, and he has become the spokesman, really, for the Godhead. And so that's where we are. And so let's go back and I'll just read the three verses, 30, 31, and 32 out of Acts 26, and then we'll take up with Acts 27, because the little dissertation that was going on at the end of Paul's deal with the two governors that he was dealing with Felix and also with Festus. And that they had kept him in bonds basically for about 2 years and 3 or 4 months, I guess. And so we'll pick up with that and then go right on into verse 1 of Acts 27, because we're going to be dealing with other people now too, because what we're fixing to read right now, if you hadn't been following it along, it'll kind of bring you back up to speed a little bit for what had been there. Verse 30 of Acts 26, it says, "And when he had thus spoken, the king rose up, and the governor and Bernice, they that sat with them. And when they were gone aside," this was the group that was listening to Paul give his dissertation as to what had happened on him from the Damascus Road to now. And it says, "When they were going aside," this was King Agrippa and his wife, and the governor of the area, Festus, and so they had a little conversation between themselves. It said, "And when they were going aside, they talked between themselves, saying, 'This man doeth nothing worthy of death or of bonds, not even to be locked up, but when he had appealed to Caesar, that was the deal. He felt like he had to do that in order to get this thing cleared up for a while, or he would never get loose.' And he said, then said Agrippa unto Festus, 'This man might have been set at liberty if he had not appealed unto Caesar.'" So, if it's just like appealing to the Supreme Court in the United States. And this is basically the way Paul was looking at it, because he knew the law of the Gentiles and he knew the law of the Jews. So he was either fighting one or the other all the time. And with things that they should have known, or really things of God that they didn't know. But Paul did. Paul knew them. And so we'll start with chapter 27 in Acts. And the very first three verses deals with a new centurion. Because they're going to, since he has appealed to Caesar, they're not going to really turn him loose, but they're going to give him a little more liberty than he'd been having. And so they're going to turn him over to somebody that can get him to Rome. Because Caesar abides at Rome. And so he's got to go there to get cleared. That was his understanding anyway. But it says in verses 1-3 that Julius was a centurion of 100 men. But he was of a different band of Romans that Cornelius was when he was looking for Peter up on the rooftop of the house over there.
Like a different regiment.
But it's a different regiment. They had different insignias on their arm as to who they belonged to. Okay? And so that's where we find ourselves here, because a lot of this stuff is pretty clear and some of it's not so clear. But it's a different band. And a band would be 100 people in that group, and they would take the name of some of the Roman hierarchy and use it that way. So I'm going to read it and then read my notes. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain others prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. So that was the first verse. Now, let's go and look at the notes, because these people left quite a few notes, and some of them were real good, and some of them were created with me questions, because a lot of them... And here in this very first verse, it doesn't tell exactly who was with Paul, but it said certain others and also prisoners unto this one named Julius, this centurion, okay? And when, or as it was determined, that Greek word there, determined, is the Greek word krino. And that equals to the word in the English decided, that we should sail. And sail there is another Greek word. And it is apopleo. That's the word used for sail. Well, the sails that was on these ships weren't like sails that we would see out here on the lake somewhere, because these sails would turn and you could go pretty much the way you wanted to go if you knew how to sail, which is a little deal with all this. And a lot of it is tacking, they call it, because you could turn the sail on the pole and catch the wind and work it with you, for you, or against you, either way you want it to do. Okay? And they were going to sail apopleo, into. And that little into there is the Greek word eis, E-I-S, into Italy. And they delivered, or was delivering, or were delivering, and delivering there in the Greek is paradidomea, paradidomea. And they were delivering Paul and certain ones, and these certain ones were called in the Greek tines, T-I-N-E-S. So they didn't make a great determination as to where they were from or what nationality they were. That's just the word out of the Greek that was used there. And it talks about other. And we, or others is people of a different sort or a different kind. And prisoners. And there's a different word for prisoners there. And the prisoners there is a heteros in the Greek. And unto there is the word desimos. Unto one named Julius. Julius is a centurion. And a centurion, as we have understood it to be, is a man in the Roman nation that is over 100 men. Now, the chief centurion that we talked about that Paul was dealing with for a while back, he had 1,000 men in his garrison between Jerusalem and the temple. Because the temple, because the people knew that there was a lot of golden stuff in the temple, and all of these crooks were over there trying to figure out a way to get in there and to the temple and get the processing stuff that was made out of gold, the things that were on the altar and so on. Yeah. So they needed a pretty good garrison of men there. But this guy was not one of them. So he was from a different band. And they sent here the captain over, over 100 men of the Augustus band. And that Greek word for Augustus is Sebatos. S-E-B-A-S-T-O-S. C-E-C-S. Sebastos.
Sebastos.
Sebastos. Sebastos. Man. And, or a cohort. The band is 100 men. And they were called a cohort. L-Y-R-E, a group. And the Augustus band was named after, Augustus, one of the Augustuses there, and it came with, it had a normal, where they came from where they normally resided. In this man's area. And so when they got them into service there, then most of them were kind of like manner because they knew pretty well what the other knew. It So they did mix a lot of different people up from different areas of that area. They tried to get these troops into a unit that could work and do what they needed done. So this was the way that worked. Then we get to verse 2. And it said, and entering into a ship of Adramatamedum. And I might have misdone that one too. But that's the ship that Julius was had charge over. We launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia. And that's not a full stop there. That's a semicolon. And it says, one Aristarchus. Now, we remember Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica. He was a Thessalonican being with us. It doesn't say anything here about the Apostle Paul. About Dr. Luke being with them. But it does say in the notes. And so we'll read it. And this is a pretty lengthy little deal. Each one of these were, because they were putting a lot of information in it. And it said, and entered into a ship, and that ship there is Plion, Greek, having embarked upon, and to be embarked there in the Greek is Epibano. This Adramatium, and that's equal to a city in Mysia, in the province of Asia. So they even named some of their ships where they normally went or had been to, and they would sail around in that area and even go further out. But this was the port city in the province of Asia, as the head of the Gulf, and the head of the Gulf was of that same name. And it says that we launched, and that Greek word is pretty self-explanatory. In the Greek, that is anago. If you launch something, you're going to go. So the G-O is the last part of it, is the last part of that word, meaning to bring about or to sail according to the text. This does not refer to we there when it says we launched, but to the ship. It means the ship launched. Now, whether these people that were on it to begin with got off and then the ship left or not, it doesn't really say, but they did talk about one or two and about some prisoners and about others that was on this ship. So the we there was not the ship, but it said the ship sailed or launched. The ship was on the return voyage to Adramatum by the coast of Asia to sail. And that word sail, you're going to see it quite a lot in this next 40 verses of scripture, but the sail there is the word pleo in the Greek, by the coast to the place against Asia. And again, the word there against is the word kata. K-A-T-A. K-A-T-A is meaning against something. And Then it said one Aristarchus, a traveling companion of Paul of Macedonia, along with Dr. Luke only. So Paul has got two people with him. And it tells you about one, but it didn't tell you about Dr. Luke. Dr. Luke don't like for his name being here very much. He'll say we or us or whatever. But Luke just, he's the writer of the book of Acts, but he doesn't really like to put his name in there. He's kind of like Paul with the Hebrews, you know.
Yes.
So Dr. Luke, he and Aristarchus and Luke is there with him on board as Paul's servants with us. Now this was in the notes. As I look at the others with Paul, that he, Julius, might need extra help into his journey to Rome, that Paul might need extra help. Like, Julius is made a pretty good scan of Paul and seeing that Paul ain't in the best health that he's ever been in. Of course, he's been in jail now for over 2 years, just got out. So I guess his motor functions wasn't doing really good. And so Julius kind of felt the need to give Paul a little extra freedom. Because he, on a ship, he had every, where could he go? He couldn't go anywhere but overboard. Okay, so that was not a big idea, a big deal for Julius to say, well, this man has got his two servants with him, and I need to let them get together. Because evidently, they may have not have been housed in the same part of the ship. Verse 3, and it said, and the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. That's a neighborly thing to do. I mean, I don't think he even had that with Festus and Felix.
I think even people that didn't understand what was going on, even they liked Paul.
I think Julius already seen something in Paul that he couldn't figure out himself.
Yeah.
Okay. And the next day, heteros, we touched or we landed. And that in the Greek is katago. When it talks about touching, it's different from It's a little different from some of the other words because they could make port there. It was, you know, it was in a place where you could make port.
Yes, spoiler alert. They're not going to make this port again.
You know, outside.
Not next ship anyway.
Outside. And it says the great port of Phoenicia was about 70 miles north of Caesarea. And it said the wind must therefore have been formidable from the south to southeast. And Julius courteously or kindly and entreated Paul, and the word entreated there in the Greek is philanthropos. And, you know, it's kind of like Philadelphia. It starts out that way, but is fill out some folks here and give him liberty. And liberty in the Greek is the word epitrio, to go unto, and that word unto there again is the word pros, his friends, to refresh himself. And that refreshing himself in the Greek is toucheno, means to touch one or to, you know, deal with one, to go unto his pros, his friends, to refresh himself as to their care. And the word care there is the word epimelia, is so that they could give Paul care, whatever he needed, and to talk with him and find out how everything was going and so on, because evidently they weren't all together all the time. And then we get down to verse 4. And I want to read you a little bit in the note here. It says, from verse 4 here to 41, it said, herein lieth the voyage and the tempest. So for the next 37 verses, you're going to get the right act of the hurricane that they got involved in. And it says in verse 4, and when we had launched from thence, we sailed into Cyprus because the winds were contrary. Okay, so you see, they're already in this bad time of the year, and the winds are just, you know how a hurricane is. Sometimes the eye goes one way and sometimes it goes the other. So they're fighting all this. And it said, and when we had launched, and that Greek word is anago again, from there, it says, there we sailed under the lee, L-E-E. And when you are looking at the word lee there, it can be a lee, or there's another word there that they use sometimes that I didn't pick up on in this particular section of the book, but it means under the lee or around on the calm side of the Nile, or a land mass. And if they can get the wind between them and the land mass, they can do a pretty good job. But because they are on the lee side of the wind, and it's not against them.
I was wondering what leeward meant.
Yeah.
A lee. Calm side.
Calm side. That's the calm side. Okay. Under the lee of Cyprus, And that lee there in the Greek is, Papalio, because the winds were contrary or opposite of desire. Because when you get to a certain point, you get around toward the end, going out from the end of that thing, then here you are, you're dealing with it again. It's just while you're behind that, they could sail along pretty good and make time. But when it gets against them, then they gotta work against it. And, if the wind is blowing south, southwest, then they got to turn the head of the boat north toward north, or northeast, that many degrees, to where as they go, they're not going in a straight line, they're going in an angle all the time. And they fight in the wind, but they still can go. And that's the way it went. Well, they ain't got a way to tack. The sails don't turn. So you can't tack. And it tells us that a little bit. Because the winds were contrary. So once they get beyond that lee area, then the wind gets contrary again. And, that's pretty kind of self-explanatory, but not really, because without knowing a lot about sailing and all this, it's just kind of all new to me, to the sense that I've never been on a sailboat. So I've seen them on television and all this, but never been on one. And verse 5 says this, "And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia." Okay, so they went across an open space and came to another place. It says, "And when we had sailed across," and in the Greek, that word is diapleo, "over the sea of Cilicia." So each one of these little places have got an area there that they call their own sea. Okay? And Pamphylia. And it said, "And we came down," or came to Myra, "and landed there," the same as came down, "and there in Lycia, the centurion Julius, centurion there is the word shows. Let me turn my page. Well, that was 5. Okay, let's go to 6. The 6th part is in. Yeah. "And there in Lycia, the centurion Hyrios found a ship of Alexandra." And here's the deal in the notes with this one. Egypt was the granary of the ancient world, and this ship was a corn ship bound for Italy, or sailing into Italy. "And he, Julius, the centurion, put us, or caused us to embark from his ship, and he," well, it should have, to me, it should have been disembarked from his ship, "and embark," and that embark there is embibazio. And that is a medical term probably used by Dr. Luke, used for setting or resetting a dislocated limb. It was like they were going off of one and they were bent into going into another ship, which probably didn't have the amenities that the ship, that Julius had. And it says that that was a medical word for setting a dislocated limb. There it, literally, reinstall us there. Mm-hmm. They were taken from one place as if they were out of joint, and they were reinstalled in the other ship. Okay?
I wonder if Julius had the power to just put them on there since they were Rome. And
yeah, he was looking for a ship that was going to Italy. He didn't want to go all the way to Italy. He must have had dealings somewhere else with his ship. So he was going from place to place and pulling in and finding out where these people were going to. And he says, after leaving the lee, the shelter of the wind, of Cyprus, the wind here too was astern or would be on their port bow. And as ancient ships had not the same facility in tacking as the modern ones, they could not sail as near the wind or not nearer than 7 points, it is believed. The 7 points would be 7 marks. Actually, it would be 7 degrees. Okay, but now they could set their ship as far off as they needed, up to 7 degrees, to keep it, sailing, and to keep the bow kind of headed that way. But they were going, in an angle.
Yeah.
And it was taken.
They couldn't go straight.
They couldn't make, no, they couldn't do that. Okay. Since the ancients understood quite well to arrange their sail so as to beat to the wind or beat to the windward many days, and it doesn't say how many days they were there, many days in or en, and scarce were come, or that they come with difficulty over against Sinope, an important city situated at the extreme southwest of Asia Minor, and the wind not suffering us or blowing us off course, we sailed under Crete and over against Salamone, knowing as Candia. And Salamone was its eastern cape, and also this was the deal that they had there, all the way from getting into the new ship. They were having problems from that time on. In verse 7. And in verse 8, we get into verse 8. Let me turn my page in the Bible. We'll read verse 8, and it says, and hardly passing it, talking about the cape that they went by, and they, as it was written here, it coming, reminds me that they felt like they might get grounded there because of the wind. That the wind was pushing them where they didn't want to go.
It's been a fight ever since they left.
Oh, yeah. Evidently. and hardly passing it, came into a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lasea. L-A-S-E-A, Lasea. Okay, so they did make it by the cape there and got to another place that, and it said, and hardly, and the Greek for hardly in the Greek is molus, and hardly passing it, meaning they felt like they were really having difficulties with that. And that Greek word is para legomai. L-E-G-O-M-A-I. Legomai. Like the Lego toys. And it says, only here, and in verse 13, is this paralega, Lego and I, is used. And we haven't got 13 yet, and we'll not get there in this study. But remember, this is the only two places that this was used, and you can see, because they used it there and they were going to use it somewhere else, that it was something that they really didn't want to deal with. They had difficulty. They had difficulty in weathering the points of the capes. When they would get to the end of the cape, and get to where it jutted out, and they had to go below that, and the wind was coming down,
yeah.
Then they were into it again until they got to another place.
I've been out with Billy on the boat, and sometimes when you go around like the end of the jetties or something, you get to fight that wind, man.
Everything changed.
Even with 200 horsepower, it got hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything changed. In verse 8, where they sailed and they had difficulty in weathering the points of the capes, they came to a place which is called the Fair Havens. And it bears the same name still. Today, you can go there and find
the
city called the Fair Havens. Okay. Now, and it was nigh or close to where unto was the city of Lasea. Evidently, this city that was called Lasea is not there anymore. Lasea is gone. I think the Lasea swallowed it up. I don't know. But, you know, there was places even in the scripture during Christ's time, when he was not allowed to go into a city, then that city is no longer there. This is God's way of telling, thinning out the situation there. So, I don't know if this was God's will or not, but, here we are, and hardly passing it. Boy, you can only think, man, here I am in this ship loaded down with corn and with a lot of people in it. Now, there's a good many people in this thing here, not just Paul and his few compadres. They had already picked up a bunch of passengers on this thing. So this corn ship was going to Italy, And a lot of people wanted to go to Italy by the way of the sea. And we ain't got there yet, but I'm just saying that this in verse 13, where they use the same word twice there because talking about it being hard to pass or hard to get by or to get around, meant that it was really, really a process. We ain't got there yet, but we got two or three more verses to look at to do it. And then we get to verse 9, and it says in verse 9, "Now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them." The fast was already past. So Paul was looking back to the things that the Jews had dealing with their feast. And one of them was atonement, the Feast of Atonement. And that's what he's talking about here. Oh, when he talks about that, what else can you expect that he's going to say? Well, the writers that put this into English has told us what the day that he's talking about here or around that day was. It was around October the 1st. When do we have the most of our hurricanes? On the Florida coast, or the coast, the east coast of the United States.
Mm.
So it's just started, you know. It's just started from June and it runs to almost Christmas that you have these hurricanes come up. Well, they've been in one for a while. They've been dealing with the situations of those things. Because of the fast, it says, well, let me go ahead and read my notes. "Now, when much time was spent or had passed," and the word "spent" there in the Greek is the same word as we had up there a while ago, is paralegomea, paralegomea. "And when sailing," now, in sailing here in the Greek word is pelos, P-L-O-S, pelos. So sailing has changed a little bit. And it says it was now dangerous. So it got to the point where everybody on board knew that they were in a fix. Even the Apostle Paul. Because it says this. Dangerous is the Greek word epicephalies. Epicephalies. Because the fast. And here's the fast. The 10th day of the 7th month. The Day of Atonement came about October the 1st. And it had was already passed because the days that they were in this thing they call dangers was during the Day of Atonement, during there. And so Paul says, okay, it was around October 1st. It's done past.
So it's hurricane season too.
Okay. So we look at our hurricane season. Well, it's right in the middle of our hurricane season. And that's where most of our hurricanes come from. Sometimes they'll come from the Pacific side, but not too often. It seems like a little more so lately than it had been, but ordinarily their time was in the middle of the hurricane season. So, passed. And Paul admonished them, and he admonished them with a mild rebuke. And I had to look that up. And it was a reprimand. Well, why did Paul do this? Why did he feel it necessary to give these folks a mild rebuke? Because something that the Jews looked to as a part of their deal in life has passed them, and if they didn't have an opportunity to get involved in that, they were out at sea, in danger.
And under lock.
Yeah.
Right. Guard.
Okay. If I asked myself the question, and I put it in my notes, why did Paul do this? And it says, see the next verse. So Paul is going to answer that question for us, and I got 3 minutes left to do it. And we're pretty much figured out to where if I do 9 or 10 verses, I can't get any more done in that hour's time. So here we are. I'm done, but I'm not that done. And it says, in verse 10, I'll read it out of the King James. It says, and said unto them, sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading, which is corn and ships, but also of our lives. So
he literally scared to death.
Paul perceived this. He didn't say that God told him this, because an angel is going to come to Paul later on, but not yet.
Yeah.
But Paul's perception was, we are in trouble. And we need to ask someone that can take care of the trouble to relieve us of that trouble. When do we call on God the most is when we're really in need. And so I just make this a point even unto us today, because that's the reason for our prayer list and the supplication list and all these things that we can't do for ourselves. We need help. We can pick up the phone and call 911, but if there's a tornado coming or if there's a hurricane coming, they can only do what we do, and that's hunker down and wait till it's over. But the God of the universe can do things, and Paul is his spokesman. And Paul says, sirs, I perceive. And that perceive there is the Greek word theorio. Guess where we got that word from? I perceive with the eyes I am looking, and I am seeing these things before my face. I'm going to explain. To gaze as if is where we get our word. We gaze as if where we get our word theater. Just like you're sitting in a theater and this play is going before your face. That's what Paul was perceiving. He was looking at all this. And he says, Lord,
well,
it's beyond me.
He's under pretty constant guidance of the Holy Spirit all the time.
All the time.
It doesn't, wouldn't surprise me at all that the Spirit says, hey, here's how this can turn out.
Yeah, okay. So, we get our word, perceive there is like we're looking at a play going on stage. A bodily presence as to see and feel that this voyage or this saving trip that we're on will or is about to be with hurt. And hurt there is the Greek word hubris, and much damage is, and that word is loss. Damage is equal to our loss, and the Greek word for that is zimeia. Not only of the lading or the cargo or the corn that it carries, but it's carrying people too. Or photos. The cargo is photos. And ship. So he's worried about the ship too, but also of our lives. And our lives there is the word suke. What we call our soul.
Spirit.
And so that's the reason Paul was admonished and said, we need to have a little talk with our spirits here. To the Father, the one that can do something about it. And so, we'll find out next study or two what the Father did about it. And so, Paul got a little different understanding about this after the angel come and spoke to him. Because Paul was certain, almost certain that this is going to be the end for a lot of these people, maybe himself. And even though I know he said before, to die for Christ, I'll do it in a minute.
James, yeah.
But, you know, when you get down, looking at your friends and you know you can't do anything much more for your friends, and it becomes a whole new ball of wax here. And so this is what we're looking at. And so what we've just explained, here is, the fact that yes, they were in dire straits. And sometimes we get that way too. We get in dire straits. We get in a situation that we can't handle. We try to call 911 to get out of some of that stuff. But there's some of it that 911 just can't handle. Never has and never will.
Yep.
And so, glory be to my God that I serve. He is one that can. And this is not the end of the story, but I just wanted to point out the fact that when you have salvation, you're never lost. You may not be alive, but you're never lost because God knows where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have given your heart and life to the Lord, then you can never be lost. You might not know where you are. And you might not be alive, but God knows where you are. And that's what counts. God bless. I hope you got something out of that. It's, when you get to looking at it, it's a lot of this stuff you have to kind of play it over in your mind and realize what these people were involved in. And they're not out of it yet. We're just...
Oh, yeah, we're just getting started.
We've got 25 or 30 more verses to go in this before they get out of that problem. They get into another problem or two when they get out of that problem. So it just goes on and on because the God of this age is continually throwing things at God's people. And he's not going to give up till God lights him up from the fire within, and they're going to see him melt right down.
Yep.
I'm wondering if I'm going to be one in the family of God that's going to be able to see
that. To witness it, yeah. That'd be pretty nice, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be something I'd... Never thought I'd ever say, but, you know, there it is. So God bless you folks, and I hope that gives you a little sense of, sometimes we think, you know, we ask ourselves, well, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why am I learning all this? Well, you're doing it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's God's work, and so this is what we're here for. So thank you for your attention.